Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Pentagram, dedicated to Henry Foreman. In the year of the primal force and the dawn of terrestrial birth, man mastered the mammoth and horse.
Well, my friends, almost at episode 200, I'm Alan Averill. This is Agitators Anonymous. Today, as promised, I will be discussing some of the various rules and regulations involved in hate speech legislation that is being implemented in various countries, but specifically Scotland and Ireland. With a bit of tongue-in-cheek humour and a little bit of You know what to expect. With some seriousness underpinning the whole discussion. Because whether you're from the left or the right, it doesn't really matter. And that's not from where this podcast is coming from either political persuasion. It's really about the concerns over free speech and civil liberties and all that kind of thing. And the reasons why these things are happening and starting to happen across the West. I'm going to start to look at that across the world, really. And why? And like I said, if you think that it's just conspiracy, it isn't. And if you think that it's not going to have anything to do with you, it may not right now. In fact, all of these laws and regulations, you might go through the rest of your life never bumping into them. But they might bump into someone you love who's trying to speak out against tyranny, against authoritarianism, against the state, or just having the ability to express their opinion. Or it might very well bump up to you when you least expect it. It could take a month, it could take 6 months, it could take a year. It could be the author of this podcast, perhaps, who gets into trouble and calls on your acknowledgement and understanding, or the idea that we have to be cognizant of these things because they move in kind of through stealth. So bit by bit, they take away human rights and civil liberties and all these kind of things and freedom of speech. And as you know, if you've listened to the podcast long enough, the principles are, well, freedom of speech, most of all, but also skepticism being the only rational perspective or the greatest perspective, and being, you know, skeptical of the motives of authority, the motives of technological, technocratic institutions of power and governance and economics. These are the things that drive the sort of the political angle of Agitators Anonymous. And then, of course, there's the heavy metal hoopla and the, hey, I'm a middling rock star and a middling, band that is kind of over the hill and in its last few chapters. There's those stories, but when it does get political, those are the principles. And I will state that I consider myself somewhat politically homeless. I take from column A, from column B, from column C, from column D. And I don't really care about how those things are perceived by people who only want to categorize people in the most extreme, by the most extreme things that they say. Or, you know, ascribe extreme positions to actually very logical, moderate positions. Well, anyway, so thanks to everyone who came to Ragnarok Festival last weekend with Primordial. We ended up playing at very last at the deadline slot. If you have ever been to a festival and you've seen a band at 8 or 9 and then 9 or 10, these are the headline slots. The last slot is the kind of everyone out of the hall slot. Come on, out you go slot. And that's where we ended up. Huge delays coming out of Dublin Airport. But there's a bonus podcast over on my Patreon about all of that and the inner workings and almost failings of a day that turned out in the end to be a minor victory. which at one time looked like it was going to be a massive L, and that we were never even going to get there. Anyway, that's over my Patreon, which is just put in Alan Averill, A-V-E-R-I-L-L. You can find me, there ain't no tears. Go and have a listen. The show is ever sponsored by Metal Blade Records, 40 years of independence in a world where most have sold out, where at least all the other major heavy metal labels have sold their independence long since. Long since. And looking at my invoice for the vinyls that I have ordered for the show in Dublin coming up, I can see there is still copies of the bastard Irish Olive Green. It's a bit upsets me vaguely that they put the word olive. They could have just gone with bastard Irish green, not bastard Irish olive green. But don't let that put you off ordering the vinyl of How It Ends, the new Primordial album from Metal Blade Records, who sponsor the show as ever. Go and follow me at NemptyAng_Primordial on Instagram and Primordial_official. And you will get the vague ramblings and impersonal platitudes involved in doing so. So first things first, of course, J.K. Rowling. And the title I've given this podcast sounds a bit daft. No, of course, I've never read a Harry Potter book. I'm a grown-up. Well, not actually. If you do like it, good for you. Knock yourself out. But that's not really the reason why we're going to talk about this. We're going to view her in relation to this Scottish hate crime bill. Now, Ireland has been trying to push through its own hate speech bill for the last while, which is kind of stalled at the moment because the government here had a very big defeat in a referendum. I'm not going to get into that referendum. And we also lost our Prime Minister, our Taoiseach, Leo, departed the scene. And I think this erected a huge stumbling block to the ambitions of this incumbent government. Not incumbent, that's not the right word. To this government, who, let's be honest, we also did not vote for, who've just been sort of, who've sort of ended up in power right now. That's a different discussion. I'm not going to start boring you all with the minutiae of Irish politics. But the government, in trying to change the wording of our constitution in Ireland, you have to put that to the people if you're going to make constitutional changes. It was all very vague, centred around the word durable, a durable relationship. Nobody really understood what that meant as they tried to change the constitution in relation to mothers in the home and work. The government sort of circled around the idea that it said in the constitution a woman's place is in the home, which it doesn't if you actually look up the constitution. And I think a lot of people just did. It's not hard. And the government was roundly defeated. And I think this really punctured their aspirations. I don't like to call them woke aspirations because I think that's sort of like an empty phrase right now. It doesn't really get us anywhere. But as soon as I say that, a certain percent of you will have your backs up. It's not that. Let's call it authoritarian measures using the rubric of safety and where this kind of idea that we're here to keep you safe from things that you aren't in your right mind to understand. It's a very paternalistic, a very colonial mindset almost, I think, if you really dig down into many of these laws that are coming in across the West. And I think a lot of them have been encouraged by lockdown, by the fact that many of these governments across the West and other countries were allowed to act with a form of impunity during lockdown, emergency laws for all. They didn't have to put them to the people. Like in the Scottish, particularly the Scottish hate speech bill, it hasn't been put to the people. They've just implemented it last week. And already thousands and thousands and thousands of complaints. But let's just get back to Ireland for a moment. So at the moment, Ireland is kind of teetering on the brink of do we not implement this hate speech bill. And if you've listened to the podcast before and you go back, you'll find I've done one about it. And one of the main defining things about this and the Scottish hate speech bill is that it more or less criminalises intent. It's up to you to prove that you were not... you did not have hateful intent, and it places the basically it states you're guilty until proven innocent, as opposed to the other way around, which is what the entire basis of our legal system was before that. It places the power, so let's call it like that, or the agency with the victim. And it's only up to their perception. So if you're from a protected group, you can, well, I suppose theoretically just say, well, I feel this way about this. I feel unsafe. I feel threatened. I feel all of these things. And it's up to you as the other party to prove that you did not have that intent. It's literally, I mean, people joke about it and they go, oh, Alan, you've got your tinfoil hat. Of which someone said that to me last weekend in Germany, going on about hate speech. And I said, well, have you actually looked at the content of this hate speech bill? No. I said, ah, okay. So I brought it up on my phone and in a choice moment showed them and said, look, here you go. The maximum penalty for this in the new proposed, well, it's not even proposed, it's been legalized, Scottish hate speech bill is 7 years. 7 years in prison, which is more, let's be clear, than your average person will get for drug dealing, for rape, for lots of serious crimes. Now, of course, said person said to me, oh, it's never going to really be enacted, you know. It's like, wow, really? So we're just supposed to ignore it. And I think that's part of what's wrong with elements of the West, let's say that, is that we've been indulged so long. We've had this upwardly mobile 30-year curve post the fall of the Berlin Wall, post the fall of communism, where the kind of sunny uplands of the middle class have become fertile ground. And we've kind of forgotten. Well, let's say Eastern Europe hasn't forgotten, but we've forgotten in the West. And as I've stated before in the podcast, that democracy is not the default setting of society. It isn't. Just look back through history. And of course, these politicians on 4-year cycles, they do sometimes want to make their moral mark. And I think sometimes maybe they don't understand something like bringing in a draconian hate speech bill in the grand scheme of history. Because in 4 years, 3 years, 2 years, they could be gone, voted out. And, you know, they'll be, they'll have gone back to the ranch, retreated back to suburbia. But someone else with far more extreme intentions might take up the bill that they passed and really go after their enemies in an authoritarian way. And think back, think to yourself, what authoritarian, tyrant throughout the 20th century would not love draconian hate speech bills and in fact did bring them in? You think you could criticise the state or the government? In fact, the repudiation of a hate speech bill, theoretically, intellectually, according to the hate speech bill, is actually a hate crime. Think about that, if you will. But it is true. It says 7 years. And my friend was, blah, 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 tinfoil hat. I was like, well, it's there in the legislation. So how is it a tinfoil? Is it easier to just call someone who questions these things as having this said tinfoil hat? But these things are moving in across Western governments, as I said. I think they've been fatted on the calf of using emergency powers and emergency laws over the last 5 years. And the idea that you have to put these things to the people is become kind of annoying. It's kind of an irritation. Now, why? Why are they doing these things? Well, there are certain reasons why. I think, as I said, there's the vanity project, whereby people who have genuinely good intentions, like maybe the minister here theoretically has good intentions about bringing in these kind of things, because they genuinely feel that there's an element of society that need protected, which is, you know, theoretically fair enough. But the idea of hate speech, I mean, the next thing is thought crime. Hate speech is an Orwellian concept. And if you read 1984, Winston, the main character in 1984, his job is to edit the news to reflect the narrative that the state, that the government, that the authoritarian government in charge wants to tell the people. That's his job. Sound familiar? Because I said before, 1984 is not an instruction manual. And Orwell would be, it's a cliche to say, but he would be wagging his finger somewhere from the afterlife going, I told you so. Because once you lose these powers, once you lose freedom of speech, once you lose this ability to question authority, to hold power to account, you don't get that back. You don't get those powers back. And freedom of speech is one of the most, it is the cornerstone of any relatively functioning democracy. It's a cornerstone of our civilization. The idea that you are able to, as I said, oppose, poke fun, make jokes about power. I mean, in the Scottish hate speech bill makes provisions for comedy, I mean, seems to state that they will go after comedians. And so, and in Ireland, you know, the production of a play, it takes away the contest. It takes away context. So let's say Downfall. You've probably all seen this movie, set in the bunker, Hitler's last days. Imagine that as a play. What this bill kind of seems to state is that the person playing any of the characters in a play in the theatre could be arrested for portraying something that is hate-filled. There's no context of it being a play. So therefore, why not music? Why not Cannibal Corpse? Why not the death metal that you like? Why not any music that causes offence? You can see where this is kind of going. It's so short-sighted. Unless, of course, your objective is to really criminalise conversations in the home. People think I'm joking. No. It makes provisions for the reporting of hate crimes within the confines of your own house, the setting up of special, I suppose, houses or whatever, not houses, institutions that you can go to report a hate crime. Part of it, I think, is the attempt at the removal of consent between parents and children. Because in in the next 10 years, I think many, many governments and many, many institutions of power and technocracy think that there's a Wild West coming on the internet in terms of mis and disinformation. You've heard Ursula von der Leyen, head of the European blah-de-blah hoopla, say that the biggest problem is not climate change. Apparently now it's pivoted to mis and disinformation, which basically means things that you say or opinions that you may have that oppose the state narrative or the technocratic narrative. So I think they think, not all the time, but some of the time, to be fair, I think they assume that the next 10 years are going to be a wild ride and that they need more powers to clamp down on all of these things. And this would require the kind of relative deconstruction of democracy. Because, you know, of course, in the West, people can vote in and vote out these people who stand for these powers. And the more you push trying to take away these rights, and the more that it begins to happen to regular people, that they began to bump up against it. Apparently, there was 4,000 claims in the first day of the new Scottish hate speech bill. 4,000. When, let's be clear, the police could be out solving actual crimes. But they're going to have to look into every single one. Are they going to arrest people for what? For tweets? I mean, this is Orwellian. This is authoritarian. This is Stasi-like. I know it's been a while since I've talked about these things in the podcast. And look, obviously, my stall has been laid out over the last 200 episodes. Personally, I think whether you're a centrist, whether you don't care about politics, whether you're a centre-right, centre-left, or hard-left, I don't know. I don't care. The point is, you should be concerned about all of these kind of things. Now, you know, of course, don't get caught in the weeds here. Don't resort to tribalism. Don't resort to the idea that, well, I can't stand on the same side of the fence as somebody I politically disagree with, because that's what I think these institutions of authoritarianism or, you know, power and whatever you want to call it, I think that's what they bank on. They bank on the fact that people are divided and therefore easy to conquer. And that playing on people's, you know, most playing on people's altruism, on people's empathy, and the fact that most people are reasonably decent is the idea behind something like this new hate crime, hate speech bill. And that's, in Scotland, they've been clearly marketing it at children. They have this thing called the hate speech monster, it's seemingly on ads, and it's clearly marked, being marketed at children, and it's also in a way telling them, tell on your parents. Now, let that sink in. Now, why is this episode called Harry Potter and the Flag of Hate, or whatever I've called it in a stupid name? A, just to be a bit pithy and a bit silly, but also to get your attention. But it would seem that the hero we all need comes in the shape of J.K. Rowling. Now, I don't care about all the other stuff that she gets into arguments with people over the internet. But I will say this. There used to be this thing called Elon Reply Guys. I remember listening to a podcast with Tim Dillon, and it was very funny, comedian Tim Dillon. And he was talking about the Elon Reply Guys. And they're basically what happens is that when somebody has so many followers online, they have people who yes and no them or who argue with them. Because if that person engages with them, they get likes, they get retweets, they get their own audience. And so it's like it's part of the game of trying to find your own audience. So somebody as famous as J.K. Rowling, who's like probably the richest woman in England, you know, sold more books in the 21st century, or probably in the last 50 years, than any other single person. She's very powerful, very rich, very famous, and she's very active on social media. She replies, so people go, ah, this is how I gain my fame, by trying to snipe at her, etc. And also, how many of the people sniping at her are actually real or actually bots? I don't know. Consider that. But so the SNP, that's the party in charge in Scotland, passes the law. Don't put it to the people, by the way. You also should note that. And instantly she tweets at them. Am I going to jail, basically? Are you going to arrest me for what for my supposedly transphobic tweets, or all my other tweets? You know, if you've been aware of the kind of controversy surrounding J.K. Rowling, you'll know about that kind of stuff. I'm not going to get into it or all that kind of thing. But the SNP then sort of, the government responded, no, of course we're not. So then she started to go through all the lists of, in tongue-in-cheek, calling out all these people that have been threatening her or whatever, who, by the bill's definition, should be guilty of hate crime. You can go and follow the thread. It's quite clever and quite well done. But what she said was, I will retweet. If anybody tweets something, woman tweets something and gets in trouble with this bill, I will retweet it. And then they will have to arrest me too. It's very clever what she's done. And one could say has almost sunk the bill before it got out of the gate. Very similar to what Elon did about the impending hate speech bill in Ireland. He said he would financially back anyone taken to court by the hate speech bill. And these are the kind of saviours of free speech that we need. Now, I know Elon was the darling of many people 5 years ago. Now he isn't. And you have to ask about why that is, that the media have gone after him, and how the owners of Twitter before Elon, which included, munitions companies, people who had percentages in Twitter, were people who manufactured weapons. And many people who now carp about Elon didn't really seem to have a problem with that, which I think is absolutely morally incredulous. But this very famous woman sort of took on the bill and said, OK, well, then arrest me. And it got more attention drawn to it by her doing this than almost the bill itself. And as I can see, it's probably in trouble. Do we have anyone in Ireland standing up against what the state is doing here? Do we see Bono riding into the, the fray, to wielding his freedom of speech sword? Well, he's a long-time attendee of the World Economic Forum, so probably not likely. But no, by and large, people here, famous people, with the exception of maybe like Van Morrison or something, who doesn't have much social or digital clout anymore, have been pretty silent on the matter. Van Morrison gone a little bit mad lately. Mm. However, that's a different story. Like I said, there's a wee bit of tongue-in-cheek in this podcast. Like I said, if you don't like what I'm saying, don't take me that seriously. But go and take a look at these bills yourself. And you will see clearly how it's been framed, that it has become, like I said, the turning on its head of the legal system, which was, innocent till proven guilty. These bills both basically project, you're guilty until you can prove yourself innocent. And also, you can have content on your own personal devices, which can be taken. And if defined as hateful, you could be arrested for the potential distribution of those items, what they are. Who knows? Could be a Cannibal Corpse album sitting on your downloadable file. However, yes, there's no celebrity here taking on all these kind of things. If Primordial was as big as Sabaton, then perhaps I could step into the fray with several million followers. But alas, I merely have an army of 11.6 over on Instagram. Hint, hint. And Twitter, I deleted my Twitter many, many years ago. I just saw it for what it was as just a kind of cesspool of people sniping and bitching at each other, and I just deleted it. It must be 7 or 8 years ago. But there's something more, there's something else that, you know, if you dig down into the reasons why Ireland and why Scotland, as one of the kind of first countries to do, to try and implement these laws. And I would say it's because both countries, have been victims of colonialism, empiricism, and let's call it broadly conservatism. The Conservative Party is how people see it. And in Ireland, you know, as we learned in history class and geography class, up until the 1980s, Ireland was like, you know, 95, 96% Catholic. We were all the same religion, same ethnicity 20, 30 years ago. We had the same political cleavages, they said, that is what they called it. And I always never forget that. Well, I don't know why. But we had the same, we had very little political cleavages, differences between us. And all Irish political parties, except the Labour Party, come from the same root. And that root is, I suppose, anti-empirical, anti-colonial, a leftist perspective. Of course, it's 100-odd years ago, so, you know, take that word with a pinch of salt, because I think largely left and right are fundamentally redundant and used as weapons by these institutions of state and governance to sort of divide and conquer people. So instead of seeing what they have in common with somebody else, like I said, the horseshoe of politics eventually ropes around the other side till both sides are questioning the machinations of these, you know, technocratic industries. But why Ireland and why Scotland? I think that's because we don't have a centre-right party. We don't really. In Scotland, it's basically Scottish independence hangs on the SNP. Who are the resistance, I suppose, on one level politically to the Conservative Party. The Conservative Party, obviously, are from the south. So many people, I think, would vote for the SNP regardless of the things like this hate crime bill, because they see them as basically being the only Scottish alternative. All the other parties are English, so to speak. So there isn't a resistance to these bills from the centre-right or something that is internal to Scottish politics that stands in opposition to that, not at least that I can see. It's similar in Ireland. Most of the parties stand on the same side of the fence. They would argue the toss about a couple of different things, and I would say, yeah, okay, so maybe if Sinn Féin get in power next time for the first time here in the south, they might try and change some of the housing laws, some of the housing rules, some rent, that kind of thing. They might try and challenge the housing market in a way that Fine Gael, which is where our Taoiseach Leo resigned from, who might be a little bit more centrist or centre-right fiscally. But fundamentally on issues like this, they all kind of come from the same side. So there's no opposition. There's no one, for let's say, from centre or, you know, relatively right politics to drag things back into the middle. The hate speech bill, when it was, you know, debated here in the in the Senate, had virtually no one in the chambers. I listened to it and I read the discourse, and there's basically no one there except a couple of socialist independents. Fair play to them, standing up against this sort of industry of censorship. It's going like, are we heading towards thought crime in 6, 7, or 8 years? And, you know, the guy who asked that question was basically laughed out of the chamber. I mean, by the seven people who were in it. But it's a reasonable thing to ask if you consider Neuralink, if you consider the idea. And here's where it gets squirrely, is because, and where people will accuse me of tinfoil hat-ism, and that is when I talk about central bank digital currencies, when you talk about social currency system, and of course not exactly like it is in China, but if we get 20% of that, let's say, for example, or maybe we don't. Like I said, I'm always happy to be proved wrong with my projections of authoritarianism. I'm not a double down guy. I'm not I'm not here to be like, oh, I told you so. But if you give the state these, these metrics by which to structure an Uber-like, you know, social credit score system, which is, well, you have said this, which we have deemed hate speech, so therefore you get a percentage docked off your social score, which theoretically, doing this podcast would give me. Yeah, think about that. Is that what's going to happen? Projected 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. Is it baked into this conversation? The idea that eventually there won't be cash money, won't be fiat currency, and we get another black swan event that will alter the banking system. I don't know. There are things worth thinking about because they're interlocked with these ideas. And maybe people, you know, maybe ministers pushing for this in Ireland, this hate crime bill, I'm not sure that they consider these things or consider the fact that in 10 years, who knows, maybe Ireland has some sort of, slightly more authoritarian, tyrannical view of freedom of speech. And they use these laws that were passed 10 years previously against people that have been sitting dormant. Who knows that either? No, I normally say, and as often said in this podcast, never attribute to malice what you can to incompetence, which is Occam's razor, I think. Or is it Hanlon's razor? Oh, one or the other. One of the razors. Razor of Occam, great band, by the way, if you need to check them out. Australian black thrash band. Anyway, that's an aside. I also think something else is happening in that a younger generation of politicians who've grown up with the internet, I think there is... and I think this is something in broader society, is a very great sense of trying to rush to get, like, something must happen now or else I'm not validated. And this is the idea that politics sometimes can be a slow process of checks and balances. And there's a reason for that, that people have these checks and balances, which is to stop one side being able to rush through, without any due process, which is an important concept as well. New laws, because you need this balance. You know, politics is, in my opinion at least, about consensus. It's about compromise. But many, seemingly, when I listen to some of the younger politicians, who would be younger than me, trying to push through some of these laws, it feels like the idea of compromise or consensus or, allowing the people to debate these things properly, it's just too boring. It's just things are not moving fast enough. And I think this is very emblematic of where modern society is, where everything has to happen now. If I want this thing to happen, and I can say that I'm guilty of that as well. As soon as a gig is over, I come off the stage and I'm thinking, well, when is that going to happen again? Rather than sink in the moment. Sometimes we're just living far too fast. And to try and take a moment to just going to go to think of things in the broader the broader context. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe some of the politicians pushing through some of these things, are they considering the broader context of this? And also the broader context of the fight for freedom of speech. They're playing very fast and loose, in my opinion, with those three words, freedom of speech. And kind of almost considering, well, look, you know, if it means we lose some of these things. I heard one Irish Green Party deputy, she was saying, well, you know, kind of, sort of, and I'm paraphrasing here, kind of like, who cares really about free speech when safety is more important? And you think to yourself, wow, this is so historically illiterate to, it just, the mind boggles, because this is the kind of thing that ministers in every authoritarian regime have stood in front of the apartheid, Politburo hearing or their struggle session and vowed to fight on the good fight and bring opponents and enemies of the state to heel. And that is kind of how I see it. Now, you may think that's an extreme, a bit of an extreme view of these things. Maybe so. But someone has to ring the bell, I think. And my bell may be small, but at the moment it still works. God damn, I feel like a young Kenneth Williams. And always with these things, who knew I'd get a Kenneth Williams reference in there? Anyway, as with all these things that appeal to empathy and altruism, perhaps somewhat in their creation, the idea that they're not open to manipulation, to distortion, to abuse themselves as rules by people who just want to settle scores, by people who've just got nothing better to do, by people who simply see every context or every argument or everybody they oppose as a nail and now they have the hammer. The idea that these things won't be open to manipulation and abuse is just nonsensical. Of course they will. I mean, in theory, you could have, let's say a very Republican government arrives in the South, takes over the South, and somebody's putting on a play about the Troubles or something, which depicts, Irish history in a light they don't want it to be depicted in. This play maybe questions the, you know, motives of republicanism throughout Irish history. Theoretically, that could be seen as, you know, an incitement of hatred by the state. I mean, maybe you could say, oh, then come on, Alan, that won't happen. Protest songs. I mean, the Irish one has provisions for art, for media. And it say, you know, it kind of states, well, if it can prove its validity, what does that mean? And also the other thing is this, is that are we saying that there's going to be a small group of even-minded people in arbitration over these laws and they're not going to be farmed out to third parties? Are we saying that, you know, a third party institution, you know, may be hired by the state, you know, farming out the observance of these crimes isn't going to be leaning one way or the other politically? I think we know that's not true. And so you're going to be farming out these huge cultural, social decisions to a third party who's then going to inform an already overworked police force. Etc., etc., and on I go. Well, my friends, I think we'll draw it to a close. Go and take a look at the bills yourself. Have a look and see if these things are beginning to happen in your country. They probably are. Like I said, I think they're just, you know, the government's institutions of state and power getting the structures in early because they anticipate a rough ride in the next decade about all of these things. I mean, look. Then again, who knows the nature of politics and the four-year cycle that we're in? They could all just be binned and people could see it as vast state overreach and people have to reconsider these things and sense will prevail. Who knows, my friends? Until the next time, Agitators Anonymous, you got a Kenneth Williams reference. What more do you want? Do you want me to do an impression and say, Matron, I'm not going to do it? Well, maybe I'll do it privately and then I can be arrested for, you know, a hateful impersonation in the confines of my own home. Matron. Yes, indeed. Agitators Anonymous, over and out. Don't take me that seriously, my friends. Go and look up these things yourself. Until next time, when I will be back to doing more heavy metal nonsense.